Coming up on this episode of Inside Pop.
If you've ever wondered how some of the most memorable personalities on TV were plucked out of obscurity, this is the episode for you.
That is right. We are sitting down with casting director Evan Majors to find out his approach to casting for TV and what qualities he's looking for when considering someone for a show.
All that and, of course, the big sell right now on Inside Pop.
Hey there, what's up? I'm Sean David Johnson.
And I'm Amita Patel, and this is Inside Pop, your deep dive inside the world of pop culture.
And before we get started with the show, just a quick request. If you listen to us on iTunes, aka Apple Podcasts, why don't you head over there and give us a rating and a review? That will help other people find our show, and we will grow in popularity and wealth, and we appreciate that.
We definitely do. Do it now or do it after you listen to Sean's awesome conversation about casting.
Why, thank you, Amita. I think it is an awesome conversation. I had the pleasure of sitting down to interview Mr. Evan Majors. He is a casting director in Los Angeles who is currently working on something huge. It's the newly announced hip-hop competition show Rhythm and Flow for Netflix, and it features Cardi B, and T.I., and Chance the Rapper, all as judges. So I conducted this interview just a couple of days after the show was announced.
I'm super excited for the show and really excited to hear your conversation with Evan. He has been a part of casting a huge variety of shows, including The Real World, Married at First Sight, and Extreme Makeover Home Edition. And he sheds a lot of light on what can sometimes seem like the mysterious process of casting.
Joining me now on Inside Pop is Evan Majors, who has cast some of the most iconic unscripted shows in TV history. Evan, thank you so much for joining us on Inside Pop.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
So, Evan, the world is talking. The streets, the internet, the whole world is talking about your new show, Rhythm and Flow. You announced it earlier this week, and the internet's buzzing. I want to talk all about that and get all the inside information from you about that. How does it feel to have so much buzz about a project that you're currently working on?
It's insane. It's insane. I mean, honestly, it's everywhere. I had friends texting me, emailing me. It's like every news organization picked it up. Every blog. It's definitely the most high profile show I think I've ever been involved in.
Yeah, I think that's what happens when you work for a show that's going to be on Netflix, that's produced by some amazing producers, and that's hosted by some of the most legendary hip hop artists in the game.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's exciting to be a part of.
So, Evan, I want to speak to you all about Rhythm and Flow, but first I want to start with a pretty basic question. Can you explain to me what the essential responsibilities are of a casting department in the unscripted space?
I mean, our responsibility is to find great, what we call characters, in quotes, great people and big personalities. That's really our job. And, you know, I once read an article in Variety, and they were interviewing Mark Burnett, and he was talking about what makes a hit reality show, and he said two main ingredients are editing and casting. Yeah, I mean, within reality TV, I mean, you know, our primary job as casting directors is to find great characters, great personalities, that essentially kind of jump off the screen. You know, always kind of combing now the internet, social media, just kind of being plugged in to a lot of different areas of entertainment, pop culture.
So that's really interesting. And as you're speaking, I appreciate it as a producer. It always seems like an overwhelming task to me. And I always appreciate when somehow out of the millions of people who exist in this country that my casting team is able to find the right people for the right show. So maybe we can get specific and talk about one of the shows you worked on casting is The Real World, one of the most iconic shows in reality TV history. I feel like it started what a lot of us consider reality TV now. So what was the casting process like for The Real World?
Well, and interestingly enough, they're actually bringing the real world back. So I'm not sure if you read about that. So it's actually coming back. And I think they're in the process of doing casting right now for it.
Interesting. So if you're a 24-year-old listening to this podcast right now, get on it. I wanted to be in the real world when I was 24.
Yeah, I think a lot of people did. I mean, you know, I was casting real world kind of pre-social media. So that's when we were really going out to the different cities. We were having the big open casting calls in different cities, in different towns. So again, the process was a little bit different because we were, you know, seeing these people first. Whereas now a lot of people are submitting via social media. We're finding people via social media. We're Skyping with them, which is a little different. Again, pre-social media, pre-Skype. So yeah, the process was a little bit different. But yeah, I mean, during that time for the real world, you know, we would go into New York, or we would go to Philly or Florida and hold big open casting calls and interview people there. You know, you got to see them. You got to look at them in their eyes and to really get get a real good sense of who they were, at least in that moment. You know, Skype is a little different. I mean, you still get to know people, but, you know, Skype, you have a buffer now. And so people are a little bit more savvy, have become more savvy over the years. So sometimes it's a little bit challenging to kind of decipher if people are really being authentic over Skype, because you do have that buffer. And sometimes we end up casting people from Skype that when you meet them in person, they're not the same.
And I've always wondered about how you as a casting director deal with the fact that, you know, say back in 1992 when Kevin and Julie and Andre and Heather B were like, they didn't know what they were getting into. And I think all they knew was to be themselves or maybe try to be a slightly extra version of themselves. I feel like now if you're casting The Real World or if you're casting another show, people have it in their mind of, I need to act like Heather B. I need to act like NeNe Leakes. So how do you, as a casting producer, how do you cut through who you think they might be pretending to be to really kind of get a sense of who they are and who they could be on the show you're casting?
It's interesting because it's one of those things where it's just something intrinsic, right? It's kind of like being a detective. You know, you can tell after a certain series of questions if that wall comes down, if people are being honest, if, you know, someone's lying to you in the way they respond to you. It's just really being observant because, yeah, people are savvier now. Say what they think we want to hear.
We want to know that people are being authentic. We want to know that people are who they say they are.
Yeah.
And look, you know, a lot of times what happens on shows, you know, we interview people multiple times, depending on the show. And you might have multiple casting directors interviewing the same person, because what people tend to do is change depending on who they're talking to. So we want to make sure, despite who you're talking to, whether you're talking to, you know, a black man or a white woman or whoever it is, that you're going to be the same person when you're talking to those people.
All right, so Evan, let's get into it. I really want to talk to you about your current project, Rhythm and Flow, for Netflix. As we record this, it was just announced 2 days ago.
It was indeed. It's going to be the biggest hip-hop show ever. Biggest hip-hop show ever. There's never been a show dedicated specifically to hip-hop. There's never been a competition reality-based show dedicated to hip-hop.
I know social media blew up, went crazy. People lost their minds when they heard about the show, when they heard about who the hosts are going to be for the show.
You know, we have three of the biggest names in hip hop who are going to be our judges / mentors, Cardi B, Chance the Rapper, and T.I. I mean, you can't get any better than that.
You cannot. You cannot. Why did you agree to do casting on the show? What is it about the show that you were so excited about?
Because I am hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're going to have anyone cast this show, it's going to be me. And it was.
And it is.
Yeah, no, I mean, we have a great team. You know, it's just not me. We have a great team of other casting directors, associates, assistants. We have, you know, it's a great squad. And so, obviously, you know, big fan of hip hop, you know, since birth.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it's Netflix. And they continue to break barriers, and they are doing lots of things programming wise that are outside the box. I mean, they're killing it. So it just makes sense for me to be a part of that.
Yeah, I mean, I know you, and I know how much you love and live hip hop. So this seems like a perfect show for you. I mean, listen, you are an excellent casting person and you love hip hop. So yeah, it seems like it was written in the stars by the all-powerful Netflix gods, right? So so what was the casting process like before the announcement? How are you finding aspiring hip-hop stars who are worthy to be on the show, who are worthy to be judged by Cardi B and mentored by T.I. and inspired by Chance the Rapper 1&1?
We started scouring social media. We started looking at Instagram profiles. We started looking at SoundCloud. We started looking at Facebook. I mean, we started looking at social media, period, before the announcement was made. That's really, honestly, how we found a lot of the applicants pre the announcement 2 days ago. Mm-hmm. We had a whole team, you know, reaching out to different artists, you know, using very specific hashtags for different cities, because, you know, Netflix is a global company. So when we're thinking about hip hop is pop culture, right? So I think people forget that. Hip hop is the most dominant consumed music globally. And it has been, you know, for the past, I don't know, I would say 5 years even. If not longer, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right? And so we're not just looking for hip-hop artists in America. It's like we're looking globally in France, in the Netherlands, the UK, you know, Puerto Rico, obviously, which is part of the United States, but, you know, Alaska. You know, we're looking globally. Like, we want this show to be reflective of not only Netflix, but of the culture itself.
So for some of the artists who you did find on social media and who you and your fellow casting people and producers thought might have what it takes, you then were able to meet some of them in person. How did that work?
Yeah, so basically we're shooting in LA, we're shooting in Chicago, we're shooting in New York, and we're shooting in Atlanta. Those are our key cities. However, like I said, we did a global search. So we were looking all over. And so those are our key cities, but we just got off the road. We went to Philly, we went to DC, we had a showcase in Miami, New York, Chicago, Houston, New Orleans, LA. We just finished our LA showcase last weekend. And so, yeah, I mean, it was interesting to go to all these different cities and see the wide spectrum and array of different hip hop artists and the different sounds from the south to the north to the east to the west. And so, you know, and then obviously, again, like I said, we're looking globally. So a lot of our, you know, a lot of the hip hop artists that we were looking at abroad, you know, we were doing Skypes with those folks. So yeah, it was exciting to see that and to go out on the road and see all the different hip-hop artists, up-and-coming hip-hop artists out there.
And is there a general vibe that you're getting from them? Are the people you're meeting, you know, are they excited? Do they think this is their path to stardom? Are they skeptical, suspicious? Kind of what's the general vibe that you're getting from people?
Well, now it's like everybody's, they know.
Right.
So they know what the show is.
Right, right, right.
They know who's involved. There was tons of skepticism before the announcement on Tuesday. And I think that's just a general kind of skepticism in general. Like, if somebody hits you up on social media and says, "Hey, I'm a casting director. Do you want to possibly be on a TV show?" People are, we live in a very cynical world. So there was a lot of skepticism of when you can't tell people about the show, what the network is, who's involved. We were able to say the production company, which is Jesse Collins Entertainment, and for those who don't know, Jesse's resume, he comes from, the music world. So he produces the Hip Hop Awards for BET. He produced the New Edition story, the Bobby Brown story. We got the Soul Train Awards coming up that he produces as well. So we were able to say the production company, but we just weren't allowed to say the network.
Got it.
But even then, even still, people were very skeptical. As a casting director, that happens all the time. 90% of the time when you cast a show, we are not allowed to say what network it's going to be on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's nothing new. That was nothing new that that I haven't experienced before.
Yeah. So on this show, it's very specific, right? You've got to find a number of people who are incredibly talented, who have potential, that's visible, who are going to be able to grow throughout the show and keep Netflix, the millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of Netflix viewers engaged, right? That's a very specific thing you're looking at, looking for. I'd be interested to hear about what you think, like some of your experiences that you think have kind of tuned you into being able to find this very specific type of casting.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, it's like any show, whether it be a music-related show, whether it be a dating show. It's really that same thing. It's like you're looking for people who have that certain it quality about them, right? So these are up-and-coming hip-hop artists. Maybe they performed in front of 50 people. Maybe they performed and opened up for, bigger artists. But at the end of the day, it's about who has that it factor. In my mind, it's like I'm looking at this person and saying, do they look like a star? Do they feel like a star? With a little help, can they even be bigger, right? Like, that's kind of where my mind is going and what I'm thinking about as I'm looking at people. And that's like any show, though.
Yeah.
It's not really that different from this show to other shows that I've cast in the past or any show that I've cast.
Got it. And on that note, it's like, listen, we all bring our biases and our prejudices and our likes to our job. I mean, everyone should be aware that they do that, because everyone does do that. So I think in terms of casting, that's a very interesting and specific challenge, right? Like, you definitely have a type of hip hop that you like. You definitely have types of people that you like. So how do you get around, or do you put any effort into kind of getting around what your personal tastes are?
It's like being a journalist, right? You have to take yourself out of the equation,
mm-hmm.
right? And so just because I may not like a certain type of hip hop, I might not like drill, or I might not like whatever it is, I have to take myself out of it, because it's not about me. It's hard to do that, and I'm not saying that you're not influenced by your own personal preference,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
but at the end of the day, you have to be objective, and you have to try not to put yourself or insert yourself into your job. There's a lot of people that I interview that I don't like.
Okay.
I mean, there just is. Like, right, I interview a lot of people and I'm like, I don't like you. I would never hang out with you in real life.
Mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that I'm not going to put you on the show. Because, again, I'm taking myself out of it. I'm able to separate my personal feelings and the job at hand. And the job at hand is that I am a casting director and I'm getting paid to find the best people the best stories for a particular show. And I'll just say something else. Like, a lot of times, that's who you want. Like, could you imagine whoever interviewed and found Omarosa on The Apprentice?
Good example.
Like, could you imagine sitting across from Omarosa, you know, like, pre all the shit that she's been through and all the shows that she was on, but, like, the first time we saw Omarosa on television, right? Could you imagine sitting across from Omarosa and instantly having that feeling like, I fucking hate this woman.
Right.
But you know what? Take yourself out of the equation. Mm-hmm. She makes great TV.
Everyone needs a villain. I mean, you need villains, right? She was the perfect, the quintessential villain.
The quintessential villain.
Yeah.
And it's that thing. It's like, it's the person you love to hate.
Are there times where, I mean, you always hear actors tell their story about how they blew an audition and somehow they still got a second chance. Have you had maybe even recent experiences of someone that you really just believed was great, but they fucked up their audition somehow, or they were just like overwhelmingly nervous? When do you decide to give second chances?
Well, you know, sometimes you only get one shot. In an audition and in life.
Cold-blooded, Evan. Cold-blooded.
I mean, you know, that's what it is. And I think that's a really good thing to talk about, too, because I think people, I don't know what people think, if they forget, if they don't understand. When you go to a job interview, right? You need a job. You're going on a job interview. Whether it's a Fortune 500 company or if it's Domino's, right? It's like there's a way that you're coming to that interview. You're dressing up, you're putting on a tie, or you're putting on your good pants, you're putting on your good shoes. You're trying to get a job. You're trying to get hired. And it's amazing how many people come to auditions and they're not prepared. It's one of the most frustrating things for me as a casting director, right?
I think you are a casting director who gives much-needed tough love. When that's the case. And, you know, listen. So watch out if you're auditioning for Evan. But, you know, I would say that that's really good because I've had experiences where, you know, and listen, you're dealing with musicians who maybe they don't have a 9-to-5 job. Maybe they haven't had to show up at a specific time on a specific day, right? So I think, like, for a lot, I'm guessing that it's going to be a learning experience for a lot of these people, but they're going to have to learn quickly.
Yeah, I mean, but listen, I mean, that's no different than, again, that's no different than applying for a job, right? But that's, in essence, that's what you're applying for. This is a job.
So, Evan, one aspect of casting that I know you want to talk about, and I'm really excited to talk to you about it, is the issue of diversity and inclusion. It's such a buzzword now in TV and film, and I'd really love to hear your perspective on how, as a casting director, you feel, how successful you feel the TV industry is being in terms of increasing diversity and inclusion.
Yeah, I mean, I'll start off saying that, you know, I'm Black, I'm Puerto Rican, I'm openly gay in Hollywood. As a casting director, diversity is important, period. I think that if you are a casting director and you are not trying to cast diverse types of people, you are doing the culture a disservice. We as casting directors need to be casting diverse all the time. And it doesn't happen all the time. I think that it's something that Hollywood is still struggling with. I think the term diversity in itself has become kind of just like a buzzword.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's become within networks, production companies, it's like corporate speak, right? It doesn't really mean anything. I think a lot of networks use diversity as just a way to placate the public, right? That they think diversity is important, but when you look at their programming, it's not reflective of that.
Right.
Right? It's like, how many How many female leads do you see? How many African-American leads do you see? And, you know, we can talk about scripted or non-scripted programming, i.e. reality television. Mm-hmm. What do you see when you watch reality TV in terms of what's being represented?
Yeah.
And the stereotypes that are still being portrayed and represented in reality TV, you know, i.e. the loud black woman, i.e. the angry black mm-hmm. woman, or, you know, the super effeminate gay man. Mm-hmm. You know, these things are still happening, right? That's not really an accurate portrayal when you talk about diversity, because as black people, we are not a monolithic group.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I feel like scripted is doing a really good job on TV of, like, bringing nuance, right? Like, you can have a gay male character who likes sports. You can have an Asian woman who is flawed and willing to risk her marriage to find a serial killer, right? Like, you can have all of these nuances in unscripted shows, and I don't know. My feeling is America's ready for some more nuance like that in the unscripted world. What do you think?
I think we definitely are. I think, you know, it's the issue is just not are we ready for it, is that, you know, do advertisers want that, right? Because the advertisers pay for the show. And so a lot of times, not really a lot, all the time, you know, it's about taking risks. And if networks want to take risks of doing something that's different and going outside of the box, and networks a lot of times don't want to take the risk. So what we end up with is kind of that same, those same stereotypes when you talk about diversity that you see over and over again. And so it's not moving the culture forward. It's not changing people's perspective when they look at TV. And a lot of times, hey, people may not have ever encountered a black person or a gay person or someone who's Asian, right? They're only seeing that person via television. And so what's the image that they're seeing and that's being portrayed? And so I think that if you're not trying to change people's mind when you talk about diversity, again, I think it doesn't matter. Like, you're doing, it's a disservice.
Yeah. Two people that just popped into my mind. I'm not sure why these two popped into my mind. Richard Hatch from the first season of Survivor, right? He was gay, evil, evil Richard Hatch, but he was not that gay stereotype. He wasn't helping any women with their outfits, right? He wasn't, you know, flouncing around the island, which is a stereotype TV loves still to do. You know, he was this, like, not to be trusted, you know, out of shape, middle-aged man who happened to be gay. I thought that was cool. And then I remember, like, for me, Pedro on the season 3 of Real World was so phenomenal. He was HIV. He had AIDS, actually. But also a Latino male. And how many gay Latino men did you see before Pedro in 1994?
Probably zero, right?
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah. Maybe Ricky Vasquez on My So-Called Life, but that's it. That's it. But so, yeah, like I think there have been good examples, but yeah, obviously there could be more.
I feel like diversity has become this kind of just corporate speak that it really doesn't kind of mean anything. Like, it's used so much now that it's almost lost its meaning.
I agree with you 100%. And because, listen, I've seen so many, like, I've seen even like attempts at diversity where, like, even in staffing, it's like, oh, great, you've got some people of color all in entry-level positions. That's not diversity, you know? Or it's like, oh, look how many women we have, but they're all the same type of woman, right? Like, that's not diversity.
I mean, there's plenty of times, I would say 90% of the time, I'm the only black person sitting around that table.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? I'm certainly the only black male sitting around that table.
Right, yep.
So it still is happening. It's still something that needs to be addressed. Again, whether you're in front of the camera or behind the camera.
Yeah, I mean, we've had this conversation offline a number of times. You know, in TV, I think some people are surprised that it seems like it's a liberal place. It's based in New York and Hollywood. There would be this amazing amount of progressive
diversity, but you know, it's still a business and it's still run by people who are slow to change, who don't want change, who don't actually understand the change. So I think I'm imagining that for what you, where you're working now, it's probably very refreshing to work not only in a diverse environment, but also that you're casting, like as you were saying before, global talent, right? I'm imagining it's going to be a whole spectrum of faces and shades and genders up on that show.
Absolutely. And, you know, and that's something that I know that Netflix wanted from the beginning. Yeah. They wanted this to, in terms of the cast, in terms of the upcoming hip-hop artists that we're looking for, they want it to be global. Because, again, they're a global company.
Yeah.
Right? So they wanted to reflect that. So that's great, you know. And I have to also say, too, in terms of our casting department, it's, you know, 98% Black.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that's dope. This is certainly the first time in my career, my casting career,
yeah,
where it's 98% Black.
Enjoy that, Evan Majors, because it is sadly a rare but wonderful experience.
It is, absolutely, absolutely. And that's important to me, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't do all the hires for the casting department, but in terms of, if, you know, again, if we're talking about diversity behind the camera, whether you're a casting director, whether you're a development executive, whether you're a PR executive, whether you're an agent, a manager, it's important. I think it's important. We should be ushering in, you know, all diverse types of people, you know, gay, straight, you know, male, female, you know, like that's important. Like it needs to happen. So when you talk about diversity, you know, it's 2018, you know, you look at a show like The Bachelor that is a part of pop culture. There's never been a Black Bachelor. We had the first female bachelorette, Rachel Lindsay. And why is that? Because you know why?
Why?
Because when you talk about demo and the demographics of TV and programming, it's not LA, it ain't New York, it ain't Chicago, it's Kansas, it's Iowa, it's Minnesota, it's Michigan, it's Middle America, right? Those are the demographics. I hope it happens, you know. I think we're ready for it, but again, it's like networks don't want to take chances. A lot of networks don't want to take that risk. They don't want to risk those advertising dollars. So I think it's par for the course. I think it'll happen.
Yeah, because I guess my question to you is, Evan, do you think it's networks not giving our country enough credit? Or do you think the country really wouldn't be ready for something like that? Because, listen, Will and Grace, for example, everybody ate that up, right? And I think there probably would have been people who would have thought, oh, they're not ready for that. What do you think?
No, I think that it's both. It's both, right? It's number one, it's the network saying they don't want to take the risk, right? They don't want to take the hit and deal with the backlash. Mm-hmm. They don't want to deal with advertisers pulling out or not even wanting to help pay for the show, because obviously, as we know, advertisers pay for the show. So ABC might not want to take that hit, right? Does it mean that they don't intrinsically believe that there could be a Black male bachelor and it be successful and get the ratings? No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that we work in a business that doesn't like to take risks.
Right.
I think that we're ready for it. I think our culture is ready for it. Of course it is. Of course it is. I know for a fact that people have wanted it. When I worked on the show, we internally talked about it, and it's something that a lot of us wanted to do. And I say us because I was a part of it. I was not part of that decision making. But yeah, it was it was talked about, and it's something that, that the producers definitely wanted to do. And I know the producers still wanted to, you know. Mm-hmm. But again, this is about money. This is about a franchise. And when you're making that much money off of a franchise, you don't want to risk your golden goose.
Yeah, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So you're saying Black President, we were 10 years ago, that's step one. Step two is a Black Bachelor.
Step two is having a Black Bachelor.
In our progression as a country.
In our progression as a country. Right. Correct. Right. Yeah, for sure.
God bless America. God bless America.
I know a lot of successful Black men who would be very, very eligible bachelors. So, hey, Mike Fleiss, if you want to hire me to cast the first Black Bachelor, you know my number. Or maybe you don't anymore.
So, Evan, we've talked a lot about you being objective in your job and how that's a necessity for a casting producer. But I want to ask you, what do you think are like some of your personality traits, yours specifically, that help you excel at being a great producer and casting director?
My background is in journalism and English. So I have a degree in journalism and English. And I was a writer. I'm still a writer. I've written for many publications. So for me, it's curiosity. I'm interested in why people think what they think. That's my overall curiosity in people. I took this class in college. It was all about nonverbal communication. And so, you know, 90% of our communication is nonverbal. And so that has helped me tremendously in casting, you know, tremendously. No one taught me how to do this job. You know, there was not a class or a seminar that I took on how to be a casting director. This was something that I got into because I worked on The Bachelor. I was an assistant to the co-executive producer of The Bachelor, Lisa Levinson, and it always seemed like they were having more fun in the casting department. You know, they were trying to groom me to be more of a producer, and it just always seemed like they were just having more fun in the casting department. So anytime that I had downtime at work, in the evenings, whenever I had downtime, I would always go help out in the casting department. Just whatever they needed me to do, making phone calls, you know, whatever they needed me to do, making copies of something, like, it, you know, it didn't even matter. I just wanted to be in that office where they were. And I got on the phone and it just resonated with me. You know, I the casting director, Lacey Pemberton, she's like, wow, you're really good on the phone and talking to people, you know? And when I left The Bachelor, I knew in my head, I said, oh, I think I want to be a casting director. Even though at the time, like, I was still kind of like figuring out like what that even was. But I knew, I was like, I think I want to stay in casting and work my way up. And so that's how I came into it. When I left The Bachelor, I was a casting assistant on a show called Average Joe, which was on NBC.
I remember that show.
I was a casting assistant and worked my way up from, you know, like they say, like the rest is history. But I originally moved to LA to be an agent. I thought I was going to be the Black Ari Gold before the character on HBO was even in existence. Because I had already been doing some managing. I was managing a couple bands, hip-hop, kind of funk, rock bands in Michigan. But I started off in PR. I worked for Steven Uvain and Heidi LaPata at a very small boutique PR company. And we represented Helen Hunt and Gwyneth Paltrow and Russell Crowe, Matthew Broderick, Famke Janssen, Jimmy Fallon, Wilmer Valderrama. And so that's really where I kind of cut my teeth in entertainment, you know, and I was 24 years old, 25 years old. You know, I lived in South Central at the time. I had no car. I was taking the bus from Crenshaw and Jefferson all the way to Beverly Hills. And if anyone who lives in L.A., they know how far that is.
Yeah, both and, geographically and it just figuratively, right? Like, those are two different worlds.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And part of my job was to go to the newsstand every morning before all the partners got into the office and get every magazine, newspaper, trade magazine, and then come to the office and flip through all the publications and mark where all of our clients were featured. Any article, blurb that talked about any of our clients, I had to go through and mark it, like with a post-it note, and then make sure all those publications and trade magazines were on their desk before they came into the office. I did that every day. I woke up at 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the morning so I can be at the newsstand at 8 o'clock and then to be in the office by 9 o'clock. Like, that was the kind of hustler's mentality that I had. I still have that. And they didn't give a fuck that they didn't know I didn't have a car. Mm-hmm. Like, they hired me and you just did your job.
So here's my touchy-feely question for you, Evan. I always think it's interesting to talk to people about what their sense of satisfaction is after they work hard and do a job. So as a casting director, just personally, when do you feel really successful? When do you feel like a great sense of satisfaction?
I think the best projects that I've worked on are projects that help people. I think that because I'm such a doer and I do like helping people, I think those shows like, you know, The Deed on CNBC, Extreme Makeover Home Edition when it was on ABC, shows that help people, I think give me the most satisfaction. Even The Real World. I mean, it was one of my favorite shows to cast, you know, because you're casting a bunch of young people who are still trying to figure themselves out. So to interview someone at the very, very beginning stages of the casting process, and then to actually then cast them on the show, and then to be able to watch them on the show and see how they grow and who they are when they enter the house and who they are when they leave the house, I think that's pretty awesome to see.
And Evan, it seems really likely that that's also going to happen. I can't imagine it not happening for the people you're casting for Rhythm and Flow, because their lives are literally going to be changed. And I'm sure I'm assuming it's satisfying for you to know that you're going to be a part of that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the stories that we've been hearing are phenomenal. It's phenomenal in the sense that they're inspiring. They're really sad. Again, because this show is going to be global. You know, we're looking for hip hop artists from around the world. And so the stories you're going to hear are so varied. And again, so inspiring, so touching. And it's going to be really, really fantastic to see the growth as these artists are mentored, you know, by Cardi B, T.I., and Chance the Rapper. It's going to be fascinating.
Well, I, along with literally the rest of the world, can't wait. I look forward to it. Good luck as you continue casting the show, and we all look forward to seeing it on Netflix next year. And thank you so much, Evan, for your time, sharing your insight and your experience in the world of casting.
Oh my God. You know what, Sean? Thank you so much. Thank you, Amita. I know you weren't a part of this, but shout out to Amita Patel. Thank you. Thank you guys for wanting to put me on Inside Pop.
What an enlightening conversation. If you guys are interested in following Evan, head over to Twitter at MajorCastingLLC or Instagram at Mr.EvanMajors.
And you can also check out his website at Major www.dashcasting.com. We'll have all of those links in our show notes.
Sean, again, what an insightful conversation. I learned so much about Evan, his process, and I really enjoyed your questions about how to be objective, you know, about really, like, as much as you may not like somebody if you meet them over Skype when you're talking to them about, you know, a particular part, you have to think about them for the show. And I thought that was smart. I mean, you have to. I mean, that's part of the job. But, you know, I never thought about that because I've never done a casting role. So it is about likability, but it isn't always about your likability.
Yeah, that was really illuminating. And I think, you know, he equates it to being a journalist. And I think it's true. It's like there are times where you have to think about what the network wants, what the audience wants, what will help tell a full story. So I am not good at that. I really do need to like people. So I'm glad that he's able to do that and do it so well.
Definitely. And I love the Omarosa example. That was genius, actually, because I can imagine that.
She's the worst.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What was the most surprising thing that you learned from that conversation?
You know, it was interesting interviewing someone who interviews people for a living. I think that was interesting to me, interviewing someone who is incredibly adept at interviews. That was interesting because...
Wait. Are you alluding to sort of like maybe there was a lot of questions thrown at you that got left on the cutting room floor?
Oh, no. I'm an open book. No. But it's interesting. I mean, there is an art and a skill to interviewing, and I think we're really enjoying doing the interviews on Inside Pop. And I feel like sometimes when you're feeling yourself and you're in an interview and you want to make certain points or you want the conversation to go a certain way, you're able to do that. I guess you could call it manipulation. But when you're interviewing someone who's a really great interviewer, it's not as easy to manipulate the conversation. And what I found with Evan is that I realized that, I don't know, about half an hour in, and then decided, okay, well, let's just see where the conversation goes, as opposed to having a real plan of like exactly where I want it to go.
Nice. I mean, sometimes that's refreshing to just let the conversation unfold. So,
yeah. I don't like it. I like to be in control.
I know. And thank you again, Evan. All right. Well, no, truly do. Thank you, Evan. And we will have more after these short messages.
Shade.
This holiday season, we're flooding the Max Fun store with our biggest ever new product launch. 17 brand new items from some of your favorite shows. I bet you know someone who needs a new shirt or mug, maybe a hoodie. Cozy up in a pair of Max Fun logo socks or keep the sun out of your eyes with a Rocket Dad hat. There is literally no better holiday gift for the Max Fun fan in your life than some new gear. And hey, pick yourself up a little something too. You deserve it. Check it all out at MaxFunStore.com. That's MaxFunStore.com.
Hi, I'm the JV Club podcast, Janet Varney, and I used to suffer from indecision. I couldn't choose between Star Wars and Star Trek, whether to call or text, or the best way to cook my eggs. But now, thanks to my weekly dose of We Got This on Maximum Fun, my decisions are made for me. Thanks, Mark and Hal!
Warning, We Got This may cause shouting, phone throwing, the illusion that the hosts can hear you, laughter on public transit, and death.
We Got This with Mark and Hal. We know what's best.
Welcome back to Inside Pop.
And now it's time for The Big Sell. This is the segment in which Amit and I take turns recommending something from the world of pop culture we love to the other, and then the other returns in the next episode to give a rating and review of said Big Sell. Now, last time, I think, Amit, when we recorded, Stan Lee had just passed away, I think the day before our record. So,
yeah, I think so.
Yeah, he was on my mind, obviously, as a fan of comic books and superhero pop culture. And so I had found a great think piece about Stan Lee written by Abraham Reisman. And so I was interested for you to check that out. So I big sold that to you and very interested to hear what you thought about this piece.
Well, thank you so much for this big sell, because I definitely learned a lot, specifically because, you know, I am a fan of the Marvel Universe. I am not a comic book person, as you are. And so I didn't grow up reading comic books. I wasn't familiar with these characters in a graphic novel form. I was only familiar with them in the movies and TV shows that they had put out over the years. And so Stan Lee was the creator of Marvel to me. And he was the guy that was the brainchild behind X-Men and the Avengers and all of these characters that we have grown to love because of the huge movie franchise that they have all become. So I think I was a good audience for this article, because I would just think that, well, Stan Lee, like, he owns all this stuff and he's got to be like a baller right now. And he's in every movie, does those really awesome cameos, and I love seeing them and finding them. And, you know, I think it's a great, like, tip of the hat to him. And then, like, I read this obituary, you know, thought piece, and I am just kind of blown away, because, you know, he never actually had ownership of the underlying IP, and he couldn't make all the money that we all maybe have assumed that he did.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like blown away by that. I was just like, "Wah!" You know, and then, I mean, there's also a lot of other information in this about, you know, how he may not have given some other artists their due with giving credit for their help with creating some of these characters and things like that. And I think it's so interesting how we as consumers of pop culture can really hold somebody up on a pedestal based on the images that we have been given and sort of the credit that's been then put at the end of every movie and TV show. It's just like executive producer created by Stan Lee. So you just feel like those credits hold so much more weight. And I didn't realize that for him, it didn't totally do that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you bring up something really interesting, which is that we all have our celebrities and our pop culture creators we love. And how much of those people do we really want to know about? You know, yeah. Warts and all. I'll just pluck someone from random. You know, Ava DuVernay seems like a wonderful person. She's an amazing creator. She's doing so much for African-American filmmakers and female filmmakers, and she's shining light on disability, people with disabilities who are making films, I think, in a recent project. She's probably got some flaws. There are probably some negative things about her. Do I want to know about that stuff? It's an interesting thing to ask yourself as a fan of pop culture. How much of a person do you want to know about if you love their work?
Yeah, you're right. I guess there's a line of like really knowing who that person is versus just acknowledging their craft and their talent.
Yeah.
And respecting that, right? And enjoying their creative output. I think what's interesting is that, you know, they said, you know, the interpretation of how he viewed money is a theme in this article. And, you know, it said that he might not have had as much money because he didn't have that ownership. And therefore, that is why he continued to charge for autographs late in his age, you know. But then I think the other flip side was that he was a child of the Great Depression, and he grew up watching his family struggle. And so he, you know, kind of absorbed this thought of work as hard as you can, as long as you can.
Right.
And so I don't know which one to believe, but I maybe there's a combo of the both. But regardless of all that, thank you for sharing this with me and like kind of just giving me a little bit more of an education about this incredible creator.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. I'm glad that you got something from it. What is your review? Your 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 star review. Wait, do we go up to 5 stars?
No, I don't know where you're going. Where are you, Sean? What alternate Marvel Universe are you on?
Ooh, well done. Well done. I'm with the Watcher on the Moon, nerdy comic book reference. Okay.
Thought you'd be in Wakanda, but that's okay. That's where I'm going to be. I'll be there.
Yeah, I know which tribe you'll be with. Okay, so what would you like to rate?
I'll give this article 3 stars.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
And thank you in advance for what you're about to big sell to me, because I'm that confident it's going to be amazing.
Well, you know, I seem to have a theme lately with sharing videos featuring strong women and important messages. And I have another one because it's important and we all need to just be more educated and a little bit more enlightened by some issues that are happening right now. And so there's a lot happening right now, but I would say the conversation I'm sharing with you is a candid conversation between the star of Grey's Anatomy, Ellen Pompeo, Gabrielle Union, TV and movie star, Gina Rodriguez, star of Jane the Virgin and also a movie star, and Emma Roberts, TV star as well. They had a photo shoot for the cover of Net-a-Porter magazine, but then they also did a video companion to it where it would seem like a very honest conversation that started out discussing equal pay, but not even equal pay, just like being paid what you're worth and a little of the games that are played in Hollywood to make these successful women not feel like they're worthy of as much as some of their male counterparts or more top-tier female counterparts. And it was really revealing, really honest. There is a clip that went around a lot about this conversation from Ellen Pompeo, you know, calling out the lack of diversity she sees behind the camera and in her crews and how she's put a foot down about that in the past. And I completely applaud that, and I loved that part of the conversation. And I hope that people saw that conversation and watched the entire conversation, because they only really put out like 2 minutes of what she said. And the conversation between all four of them, I think, was really smart. And I would love for you to like watch the entire thing.
I'm that audience who saw the Pompeo clip. Loved that she said that, loved it, loved the expressions that all the other actresses had on their faces, but haven't gotten around to watching the whole thing. So thank you for this big sell. I'm really looking forward to that. I know the work of two of those actresses pretty well, the other two not as well, but look forward to, yeah, to hearing their viewpoints and that full discussion. So thanks for that. We'll put that in our show notes, right?
Yes, we will.
Awesome, awesome.
And that's it.
That's it?
Does it? Is that the and? Yes. that is it for us. But it's never it, because you can always stay in touch with us on Twitter and Instagram at Pop Insiders. And you can head over to Facebook at Inside Pop Podcast. And head over to our official website, InsidePopPodcast.com, and listen to old episodes, find out more about us, and talk to us. Let us know what you're enjoying in pop culture.
And you can find Inside Pop along with some other great podcasts on MaximumFun.org.
But wait, there's more. It's the end of the year, guys, and if you know us, you know what that means.
Yes.
Woo, 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 woo. It's time for our best of series. We are going to do our best of TV and music episode in just a couple weeks. Get your list together. See if we have similar choices. Let us know what you're enjoying this year in television and music. We can't wait.
And then we are going to conclude the year 2018 with our best movies of 2018. Spectacular, spectacular. We're going to talk about all of the films. We're not just about the films that get released in the past 6 weeks. We scour the entire year. We're going to talk about documentaries, big budget, romantic comedies, all of the films that we loved. And there might be some surprises. So, yeah, we're wrapping up the year in style, as we always do. So we're working on those episodes right now, putting our list together, checking them twice, and it's going to be great. So make sure you catch those episodes. Definitely subscribe so you don't miss them. And
where are you headed, cowboy?
Nowhere special.
Nowhere special? I always wanted to go there.
Come on.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.